You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by Football Stadium Prince. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case
Elder
scenario for City right here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally
Matt
redeems
Elder.
Himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself! Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
And Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. And it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
Oliver, goal!
It is now 2-0 Minneapolis City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
Summer is over. And that means it's time for even more soccer coming at you in between high school games, MLS games, Open Cup games, Rec League games. John and I are at them all. Mind games. This is the this is the People's Pitch, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City SC. Joining me, as always, is my co-pilot on this journey through our soccer life, John Bizworm. John, is your schedule as packed as mine now that most soccers have started?
No, because I'm not coaching high school. But before I get into it, my schedule, I was hoping you saw me sneak mind games in there.
I didn't, so that was an ad lib. That was good. just had to roll with it.
I was almost waiting for you to log on to do the show tonight. I thought I'd throw that in there. No, my schedule is actually pretty decent, man. I mean, I have my own kid stuff now. So it's like, I'm not coaching high school. We're still trying to iron out, like, is there a fall plan this year for us with the in-town guys, or what are we doing? Or are we going to dedicate to riding the ship? Like, so that stuff's going to all be starting. I believe next week is when we the minds get together.
Nice.
More to come on that, but no, man, I'm good. I'm just living life, just going to work, taking my kids to school, going to kids sports, coming home, drinking old granddad and falling asleep on the couch to the Mike Tyson, docuseries on Hulu. You know, that's kind of my that's my schedule these days. But this week, it's thrilling. It's yeah. Envy me, people. Envy me. this week's show, I can't let you, Nate, Mr. Morales, have all the fun. I, too, have not only had some old granddad tonight, I also have my own rant. So if you're playing along at home and you put the two of those together, we have ourselves another old granddad rant.
Yes.
This one, I think, is going to be good. And then we dive into the second of three installments of our unofficial People's Pitch Awards, and this time around we're focusing on the NPSL squad, which I know some of you are going to say, well, didn't you have like a giant player pool for the senior guys? Yes, we did, but there were some key moments, standouts that team and that competition had, so that's what we're going to cover today.
Nice. Well, I think that, yeah, and I think it's important too that each team had their own very different seasons with very different narratives, right? And players that perform differently for each of the teams. So it's important to reference them, right? So important mm-hmm. to recognize them, I should say. So one way or the other, we'll get through all three of these awards. But the NPSL players deserve recognition.
They do.
But first,
you perform, you get a trophy that you're never gonna ever see.
That's right. But first, John, not to be outdone by the righteous anger that I flashed in our last show, you have found something in the soccer world that really, really gets your goat. And surprise, surprise, it all goes back to the U.S. Open Cup.
Yep. Our old friend, the old bitch, the old U.S. Open Cup. So I'll preface this by, this is a little bit of old news, but I do have some like inside knowledge of some things that happened. Yeah, I spun open my soccer Rolodex and I made a phone call and I got some information. So what I'm referencing in the Open Cup is the Open Cup final which ultimately ended in a 3-0 victory last week. Orlando City taking the trophy home versus Sacramento FC in the USL. So first and foremost, this was probably worst case scenario for US soccer, outside of having two USL teams in the final. So, you know, like
just one making it to the final is like alarm.
That's actually, I think, probably even worse having one in it than having two. You know what I mean? Like, because mm-hmm. then you can just like play on like, look how far we've progressed in soccer, where a perceived second division is like competing to win the title and one of them's going to take it home and all that bullshit. But right. Worst case scenario is one USL team makes it and maybe they're good enough to beat an MLS team. So that wasn't the case. I'll talk a little bit about the match in a second, but you know, there's no spoilers here. Orlando City won 3-0. So to start things off, you, Nate, and you listeners at home or in the car, wherever you're listening to this fine piece of journalism, you may have heard that there was a Spygate situation that kind of kicked off everything 3 days leading up to the match. So terrible. Did you hear about that, Nate?
It's terrible. the controversy.
So essentially what happened was that and here's what happened on paper, and then I'll talk a little bit about what I found out. So in the second training session, so first and foremost, the location of the game ironically was in Orlando, so that's already behind the eight ball for the USL folks. Not at a neutral site, which I believe that the North American Club Championship should be played at a neutral venue. I mean, I might be a soccer purist, but I feel like that's fair. You know, like Wembley hosts the FA Cup, so why not have it at, you know, I don't care. Have it in Detroit, wherever you want. I don't care. Have it somewhere that's not a host city for a team playing in it. Anyways, as the second training session for Sacramento in Orlando was apparently recorded by a member of the Orlando City coaching staff.
Straight up recorded,
like cameras rolling, unapologetic about being there.
Wow.
So if you're talking about like a cup final, especially an in-season cup final, there's really not a ton of secrets, right? Like there's a lot of game film out there that you can watch, and mm-hmm. you can your scouts can go and watch, you know, or watch the tape. It's not like
the USL top division of the USL isn't getting TV coverage either, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you can
go to ESPN Plus.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yep.
But when you're talking about 2 days before a final or a second training session or two training sessions leading up to maybe a walkthrough, that's where you're really installing your tactical plan to go at your opponent. So that's like where you are working on things, where maybe you have a scout team running that type of what you feel Orlando is going to throw at you and how you want to counter it. So it's like I said, there's not secrets, but there is like setups and formations and things that obviously, as every soccer fan knows, you can play with that. Maybe on that given day, it's the right formula. And you know, you've got yourself a chance at winning a game that most people don't think you have a chance at. So, mm-hmm. so that's the session that they were recording. So, I did, like I said, spun up an old friend of mine who is in the system he will remain anonymous in this report. He told me that same employee, he recognized that guy from when they flew in and got into the hotel, that the guy was just at the hotel. And what? Then the guy was always around, like breakfast. The dude was like, in the facility, the first training session they were at, he was like working with like some academy players off to the side, like on the field that they were given. Then the next day, the guy comes back full camera, setting it up. And his story was that when they confronted him, was that he was setting up a camera to to figure out the proper angles to shoot the MLS Next match on that field, because they didn't have any other opportunity to do that throughout the whole fucking first half of the MLS Pro Next Pro season. So that was the guy's situation. So security was called. That guy was asked to leave. And the guy was like, yeah, sure, I'll leave. Like, just like unapologetic about everything. Like, oh no, I'm supposed to be here. Like, this is my job. So it, very, very Belichick-like, right? Like, it's like, I'm.
What are you going to do about it?
What are you going to do about it? Fake it till you make it. I'm supposed to be here. Tell me I'm not, you know, like, and then if I'm not, I'll leave kind of thing. So, but where it starts to get, where I get angry about it is that nothing's been done. Nothing was done leading up to the match, and nothing has been done after the match. Like, that is blatant cheating. Like, you know, am I wrong? That's blatant cheating.
It sounds really weird that they would have assigned someone to so obviously, obsequiously, just like hang around Sacramento. And then that same dude was just like, hey, I'm just going to set up this camera here.
Hope just going to put mind. A GoPro on his fucking forehead and start speaking to this flower, please.
Right.
You know, like just some random weird bullshit. So that was leading up to the match. Then like, okay. Then I'm like, oh my God, like this has got to break. Like this has got to be like a leading story, because like Deflategate and Spygate and Watergate and all the gates,
so like, many gates,
they become like a huge, they're literally the lead when it comes to like SportsCenter. Right. Mm-hmm. And I know soccer isn't going to lead SportsCenter unless it's like a World Cup and something big happens or whatever, but specifically in North America. But I thought like at least something would be said, and you know, like credit to like Taylor Twellman, who's employed by the MLS to do commentary, like credit to him, like he didn't let it die, but he didn't like dig into it. Like you would think Taylor Twellman would get like on a soapbox and just be like,
yeah, he has gotten on a soapbox in the past.
Yeah. Like you'd think like he would just get that big old bobblehead up on that soapbox and just go off on like the little guy getting fucked. But he didn't. And then leading up to the game, the commentary for the game, like just like brushed it over, like real good job of burying the lead. And then was like, oh, it's not really that important. Let's get to the match. Then they get to the match. And okay. So I'm still baffled that like U.S. soccer hasn't said something, but then as you know, like one group scratches the other group's back, like U.S. Right. soccer and MLS. Like we know their partnerships from the past, but then like, so nothing happened. And so at this point, like, do you like get FIFA involved? But then like FIFA's fucking corrupt as hell. So like nothing will ever happen with this. And it to, you know, in my opinion, and for that, I it's like, fuck you, like MLS, you know, like I've tried to give MLS credit. And like it is progressing soccer in the country. It's doing some good stuff. But then shit like this happens, and you're like, why? Why? Like in this game, why? Like, so anyways, got mad about that. Then the game happened. And outside of just the location, let's get to the coverage of the match. The coverage of the match was fucking awful. It was all about Orlando City.
Yeah.
All about MLS. And they got like their talking points wrong about Sacramento, and talking about how they'd never won a trophy before, and they have. The only time they said anything positive about a player for Sacramento was if that player had some MLS ties from his past. Like, this guy was drafted by Columbus, or this guy played in 6 matches for New England. Like, it was just all about MLS. And I'm like, I've sat in those production meetings for the Open Cup when we were in it, and it was like,
I was gonna say in the Open Cup they knew so much about Minneapolis City players and Des Moines Menace players that for the broadcast to not be able to speak to Sacramento is crazy to me.
Yeah, it was fucking bullshit, dude. And then like at halftime I was expecting like a montage of the best goals of the tournament so far, like the like all that stuff. And then what do? They just kind of like moved into like US a little bit of US national team coverage, and then the transfer window, and then a little bit about the first half, And then it was on to the second half. And I was like, well, that was fucking disappointing. Like, this is the championship of North America. Like, why aren't we like why isn't there a one shining moment, like montage, like there is at the NCAA basketball tournament, you know, where it's like all the great shit that happened. There were hundreds, like over 100 games that, and they were all on ESPN Plus.
Yeah.
So like, why are, I don't know. I don't want to, I don't want to monopolize the whole show on how much bullshit there was in this thing. So then we get to the match, and then the match goes, like I said, 3-0 to Orlando City. And Sacramento had their chances, and it was a good end-to-end game. Ultimately scoring those three goals after the 70th minute, when you would expect, if you're talking about a first division, second division type model, you'd expect the substitutes for a top tier organization to come in and elevate beyond what maybe a USL team has on their bench. Like, right. maybe they have one game changer.
Put it into a new gear.
Yeah, they did. They went into a new gear, and ultimately all, like, Orlando went down, or Sacramento went down one goal, started pushing forward, the other two leak in. There was some quality in the goals, but still, it was like the game went the way you would expect after a 70th minute or maybe into an overtime period. So that was fine. But there was a brief period in there, Nate, where at least in the first half, where I counted 7 straight 50-50 fouls on Sacramento, and they were not, I'm not saying like those are the fix was in here, but like the Orlando players were going down soft and the Sacramento players were going in hard on every challenge, which is what you would expect again from like a David Goliath type situation. But all of those straight 7 fouls in a row that I watched, I went back and watched it again before the show just to make sure I was right, were all in very, very dangerous positions for set pieces. And then anything that was like dodgy 50-50 that was not in a dangerous area on the field was just let go.
Huh.
And yeah. And I was like, well, that's a little weird. Like, you know, like I get it, but it was just weird to me. And then like the blatant, like, dissent to the referee from Orlando was just like brushed off. And there was a guy from Sacramento who his cleat literally got wrapped around a shoelace of a guy from Orlando in like a 50-50 challenge that wasn't like malicious or anything. Like, I just like, he slid in, the Orlando guy went around his tackle, and just random weird shoelace got caught in this guy's cleat. And like the guy got tripped up from behind, and the referee called the foul, and the guy was like, I'm sorry. And then the ref said something to him, and then the dude, like, whatever he said to the dude must have been like pouring gas on a fire, because the Sacramento guy like immediately said something, and then it was like boom, yellow card right away. Whereas, what? Like, yeah, where then like an Orlando guy fouled a Sacramento guy 2 seconds later, and like 4 people are like in this guy's teeth, like just screaming at him and like surrounding the ref, and the ref didn't do anything about it. And so there was like just like the weird stuff you would see like at a high school or college game, where it's like it's a home field advantage, and like,
yeah, just the inconsistencies that, like, yeah, this is a championship game. Like, you need Ted Uncle out there.
Yeah, exactly. So so it was just that kind of weirdness during the game. Post game, it was like game's over, quick 30-second analysis after commercial break, brief trophy raising, and then it was over. Like, there was no, again, like, let's take a look back at all the great moments of this year's US Open Cup.
Like, this is the most storied tournament that currently exists in United States soccer. But all right, folks, time for Formula One auctions.
No, it was like, no, let's go to Tulsa for the rodeo. Like, it was,
yeah, exactly.
Like, what the fuck? So then, like, you go to social media after, and I was like reading, you know, then you have like then you go back to like kind of like your rant, you know, with like the Lavelle Neal's take on MLS and the respect it's needed. So there's the two competing factions. There's the soccer fan who's like, fuck MLS. And then there's the MLS fan who's like, fuck those guys. They like MLS is best, you know, like, so you had them going after each other. And there was one tweet in particular that I read, I didn't capture it. I wish I would have remember who it was, but it was someone in the soccer circles that you and I are wrapped up in on social media. Mm-hmm. And they were like, This was the biggest steamy turd that the U.S. could have done for soccer outside of missing the World Cup. And I was like, you know what? That person is right. Like, they took such a giant step forward in this tournament to get the coverage at the lower level, to like promote the upstart teams that and the lower level teams that were on the way towards the championship, beating MLS teams, and like they sunk a lot into that. And then it was like when the rubber hit the road and there was an opportunity for an MLS team not to win this championship potentially, it was like, you know, we're just gonna phone it in, give MLS all the credit, look how great Orlando is, and we're out of here. And I was, and then on social, everyone's like fighting over that, and I'm like, I didn't want to join the conversation, because I was like, I don't want to waste my breath, you know, like,
yeah,
this will never change. It's going to, this is the world we live in. And so top down, my rant is that was fucking awful. And I'm glad that we're not going to be in it next year.
It's a good year to take off, John.
Yeah, fuck it.
Additionally, though, I'm wondering, and this kind of goes back to what you're saying on kind of just in general the treatment of it. Like, it feels almost like a calculated decision from U.S. Soccer to say, like, you know what, we're not going to hype this thing up that much. There's risk involved or whatever. Like, people don't understand the history. People aren't really going to get into it unless there's two MLS teams. And it's just like, it feels like a lost opportunity. The U.S. Open Cup is sad to me because the more I learn about it, the more it feels like a lost opportunity, you know, for U.S. Right. soccer to get people involved and excited. Right.
Well, and also, why was that on ESPN Plus? Like, why was it through a paywall? Like, couldn't they have put it on ESPN2 and not had like the Dodgers playing like the Cincinnati Reds, you know, like,
right. Yeah.
Come
just
on.
Like, is it that important?
Apparently it wasn't. Apparently it wasn't. So fuck you once again, US Open Cup. And I don't care if you hear this, it was awful. And also, John, everyone attached to Orlando City, except for the one guy I know that works there that would not return my phone call, because he knew exactly why I was calling. I don't have any respect for the shit that went on. And I feel bad for the folks in Sacramento. They deserve to be there. They put forth a really great effort, and what they had to show for it was blatant cheating against them beforehand, some dodgy stuff during, and then literally no recognition for the history of their club and their players. Yeah. So anyways, there's my rant.
I'm going to say, John, the earlier U.S. Open Cup coverage, even Minneapolis City versus Des Moines, felt better.
It was better. Those guys were prepared.
Yeah. Well, this week, old Grandin rant over. This week, we are continuing our recognition of the coaches and the players for a well-fought season with our official, unofficial rewards, or awards, not rewards.
Rewards.
This year,
it's very rewarding.
You feel rewarded. This year, we're doing a few versions of them, because we fielded three teams, right? This week, we're focusing on the NPSL squad. The Crows, I'll call it an up and down season to be kind, in the NPSL North, created a lot of anxiety, a lot of head shaking, but also it created its share of amazing moments. So let's dig in and recognize those moments, John.
All right. Yeah, let's do it. So what are we starting off with, Nate?
We're going to start off with the big wins. Let's start off on a high note. What are the big wins?
And just a quick reminder, folks, if you didn't listen to our UPSL show a few weeks ago, we are starting with 3-1 or 5-1. So number three on the field win, I think, was the 3-2 win against Sioux Falls Thunder at home. For those of you that were following along this year, an interesting trip away, as it always is, to Sioux Falls, that saw us come away with a 3-3 tie. And we'll get into that one in a little bit as well. But a lot of trash talking by the Thunder in that match away led to a potential setup to be nice and testy for the home fixture at our place. And we did come away with a 3-2 win. I thought that was like kind of the jumping off point, where it was like, we're kind of getting the ship steering in the right direction. We haven't left the dock yet, but we're not cockeyed anymore. We're pointing out in open water. Let's just cut the lines. Let's go. So I don't remember who all scored in that game. I think there was Susie and Murakami scored in that game.
Yeah.
And I don't know who got the third goal, but it was one where we were up 3-0, and then we kind of had a battle. They scored two kind of questionable goals, defensive breakdowns, but we held the shit together. And we typically draw well against Sioux Falls, so there was a decent crowd out for that one. So that's my third one. Any thoughts on that one?
That's good. I mean, we're going to talk about that victory in a couple of the ensuing awards, so I don't want to dwell on it. Let's move to number two.
Number two, the 2-0 win against Joy at home. This one, in my opinion, could have been number one, but number two for me. I think we'll talk a little bit about, sprinkle this one a little bit throughout the awards as well. And that one was just like the end cap. Like, let's it's a rivalry match. It's an in-state rivalry match, in-town rivalry match. There was a lot of players playing for our team that had some ties to Joy in the past. We know there's been some players who've had city ties that have played with Joy. Mm-hmm. Joy did what the U.S. did to Mexico in Azteca when they were celebrating their Olympic gold, and U.S. came in and shit all over that parade. They did that to us last year to end the season, so it's a really good 2-0 win, especially to get the clean sheet.
Agreed. And I'm gonna round out the big wins, John, with the biggest win of the season, one that feels the best. The 2-1 win at home versus Duluth. And I guess
knocked him off the perch.
That was it, right? Like I think all I want to say about this one is at this point in the season, hadn't gotten off to the best start. And there was a lot of anxiety right around this, and I think a lot of people were super worried about how the season was about to go. And then
and
that game, right? Like, Duluth had already run roughshod over the NPSL North up until that point.
They had been scored on for 4 games.
Right. And we were just thinking like, oh crap, here we go. Duluth's going to show up and really put the nail in the coffin on the season in like week 4. Mm-hmm. So thank God that was not the case. You know, obviously Minneapolis City was able to field a little bit of a mixed NPSL USL2 team because of the off week, luckily. Mm-hmm. But still, I'm gonna say statement victory, victory ground out with grit and heart from, you know, and there were a lot of guys on that field and in that game day roster that understood the importance of showing up
that game,
that game, right. 110%, which is funny because when you think about it, that's exactly how most other clubs show up against us every week.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a little turning of the tides a bit. But like that high powered offense came in to Breck High School. That was our last game of prep week, or our second to last game of prep week. And it really was, I mean, it was equal parts like, let's show out and get behind the boys, but equal parts like, as you know, up in the press box, like a Minneapolis City alumni event.
Yeah. Oh, it was, we had, that's right. It was so much fun.
It was so much fun. And it was just like, we went back, we paused all the pitfalls and bruises that had already happened in the season and were going to happen after that game, as we know now that it's over. We paused it for a moment and went back to playing for the badge and going out and beating a team that you got to beat in order to have a chance and hopefully ruin their chance, because they were going to have a better season than us. There was no question about that. Mm-hmm. 'Cause they got off to a better start, but ruining their chance to win a title.
Yeah. Well said.
For another year. So yeah, I would definitely say I agree with you on that one. So next up, we got big moments, top 5 big moments. So we're talking about big games on the field. Let's talk about big moments on the field throughout the summer. And we have 5 of these. Why don't you kick off the first one?
Yeah, I think the first one is going to be the Vangers. Vangers came back They were flashed again away at Joy of the People. So when talking about your crosstown rivalry, we were away in St. Louis Park, and Joy was grinding it out. And we knew that there was some, you know, this was kind of the point when the season was clearly very up and down for Minneapolis City. And it was a matter of like, is this the game that we're going to trip, that's going to trip us up? Like almost every game felt like a trap game. Right. Mm-hmm. So it was really nice to, for Lionel Vang to show up and show out, showed up.
He loves St. Louis Park, man.
Loves it there. Barry's a really nice long distance shot. And I believe he also sunk the penalty in that game, but I can't quite remember. I should look at the stat sheet.
I think he did.
Vangers were out again at Joy. And that was really nice to see that flashed, because it was, we were definitely missing it for a good chunk of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. So number four, we have everyone's favorite buddy cop drama, the Zach Soucie and Loic show versus Duluth. So here's where we go back to like that match we just talked about, but like playing for the badge, and you had guys in that, you had Murakami in that match, you had Jonah, you sprinkled in a couple, you had Lionel, a couple other, you know, guys who have been in that match before. But then you talk about the younger players coming up through the system, two partners that started with the Futures program 2 years ago, got to live what it's like to watch a Duluth versus City match and the rivalry there, but then play in it and perform. And they were like, there was a point in time where the two of them were basically single. Well, I wouldn't say single-handedly. There were there were four hands in that pot. But both of them,
what were they doing?
They both had their hands in the offense by themselves versus four and five Duluth defenders at times, mm-hmm. and we're getting out of it and getting opportunity. And it was like they were just on, and that chemistry was there, and Duluth had no answer for it. And there was a point in time when Zach scored that I think I leaned over to you and I was like, I guarantee you Sean Morgan's gonna empty his bench and put on all his strikers, and if we can withstand the next 5 minutes, we win this game. And then they did that, and then they got that basically a cheap rebound goal. Yeah, but the damage had already been done at that point. There wasn't enough. I mean, it was a little squeaky at the end, but no, those two guys definitely were the linchpin to that victory. On top of you know, like Luca Contestable, I thought had his best match of the year in that match.
Yeah, I mean, he had the free kick, right? And I think it was really nice to see the connection win us the game. Soucie to Loic, of course, who constantly showed up.
He could have buried that game too. He tried to chip the keeper. Oh man, good one. Three. Now that I remember it, oh shit, that would have been nice. All right,
number three.
Murakami and our guy again, let the Soucie Lucy produce at home in that Sioux Falls win we talked about.
Yep.
That was the coming out party of how well Matt Murakami was playing this season. He captained the side for a lion's share of the season. He was not necessarily brought into the USL2 side, I think, which was probably what he had hoped until closer to the end of the season. I thought he was one of the standout performers in the Open Cup game against the Menace, until he had to come out due to injury. But in that game, he locked it down defensively, and then he was also able to produce a goal via the head in that game. And then Soucie just was all—he was Lucy that game.
Yeah,
they couldn't keep up with him. He was up and down that wing, and he was taking it to those guys pretty much all game.
Yeah, and worth noting that was a game that we ended up winning 3-2, right? So like we needed all the offense we could get. Sioux Falls game always gritty, so nice that that was such a big moment that both those guys could show up and produce for the club, like you said, for the badge in a really clutch moment. Because again, down the stretch, those were some games that we thought these are super winnable, and it wasn't until the trip up in Dakota that it was really over for us. But that Sioux Falls game was us hanging on.
Yep, number two. Absolutely. Number two, goes back to that game I mentioned earlier. It would be the Sioux Falls away game, second game of the season. Luik comes on off the bench and single-handedly saves a point by scoring two goals against Sioux Falls. And what I was talking about, I was getting I was on the bench for that game due to some coaching commitments by the majority of the staff. It was myself and Derek Johnson was taking the lead that day. Mm-hmm. And they were talking so much trash like all game. And when they scored their second goal, I remember their captain just ran by our bench and just in his stupid, shitty British accent, just yells, "The ball don't lie." And I was like, what does that mean? Like, what? The ball don't lie. And then we had an opportunity via the penalty kick and Cole missed the penalty. And then he said it again. And then Luik immediately gets off the bench, goes in and scores two goals. And I hope that he said something like "the ball don't lie" to that guy, because I was just like, fuck this dude. Like, what is he talking about? And like, we owned that game from start to finish and they got like two shitty goals, basically. One, I guess, wasn't that shitty, but Luik came in and did what Luik does best. And congratulations to Luik. Got on the score sheet this past week with
United.
Minnesota United, basically scoring a goal like he did with us, where he finds a pocket of space. And if he can get that shot off, it's going on frame, but it's probably going in. So yeah, definitely number two for me.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I was at 9th Street with the Citizens watching that game, and the stream was not great quality and it was very frustrating to watch. So, and I think I had my daughter with me, so we left. And by the time we got home, it was really nice to see that he saved that point, I'll tell you what. And let's talk about the biggest moment, John. And this has to do with that 2-1 win versus Duluth.
I think we only played three games this year.
Yeah, it feels like three games were very memorable. The Kalen Maniscalco save versus Duluth. Free kick, perfect bend on the ball. And he gets up. And that would have put them up 1-0, which of course would have been a huge morale crushing start to the game. But new guy who looks a lot smaller than some of the other keepers that we have showed up big in that game, and it was very, very exciting to see.
I think we talked about on the show after that game that like there's two different types of goalkeepers. There's the guy that just is like, I guess there's three types. There's the guy who's so massive, like Evan Seifkin, and he just like takes up the whole goal. then there's the guy who just like is springy and he can get everywhere in the goal. And it's just impossible to sneak one by because he can cover the area based off of like just straight athletic movements. And then there's the third guy who is in the right place at the right time always. And in that match, Kalen was just like reading the match.
Yep.
And I don't know if it was a scouting thing. If it was, kudos to either himself or whoever prepared him for that match. But he was just where he should be. Not only just on that free kick, he was covering he even took a weird half step away from the corner where that shot was potentially going to go into. And I was like, oh, I don't know if he can cover that. And as soon as the ball was hit, took the half step back again, and then was able to pick it out of the corner. So yeah, right place, right time that game for sure. He definitely saved us on that one.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, up in the VIP booth with the VIP party or whatever, it felt like up until that last minute goal from Duluth, like it felt like this kid was going to keep the clean sheet and would have been MVP.
Well, on their goal too, he like made this spectacular save and the defense didn't cover the rebound, you know. Yep. Like they let a guy go free. But yeah, you're right. He was very close to getting a clean sheet, which would have been the first time they were blanked. I think they weren't blanked all year.
Right.
So there was a potential to maybe shut out the highest scoring team in the division.
Delectable. Let's get on to the less delectable portions of the season. We like to call them the teachable moments. And for me, number three, because I can't articulate one, I put them all in one. And it's just like, oh my God, there were so many teachable moments in this NPSL schedule, in this NPSL year, as we tried to, in my opinion, do a little too much in hindsight right? And at the end of the day, just game after game, whether it was personnel decisions, sub decisions, confidence decisions, decisions made on the bench, decisions made on the field, a lot of learning to have been done by these players.
Yeah, and I mean, the only thing I can add to that is 2 and 1 for me are roster selection and the big player pool. Number one with the big player pool, yep, didn't work. Maybe it works in 5 years, but didn't work in year one. But then that goes to number two. I'm kind of going out of order here, but number two with roster selection was like, it was always tough. Like, we never had a cohesive unit. There were times where we were shorthanded because of injury and two teams going in different directions. So it all kind of adds together. And I think, you know, we all know it was a tough season, but we dug ourselves out of it. And I know that every week the staff was just trying to figure out how to make it work. And we just were dealt a hand that was tough. Yeah, there was a lot of teachable moments, but your hodgepodge plus my two, I think, cover all of it.
Yeah. Let's get into the exciting stuff, the awards, John. The actual awards, if we only had trophies to hand out. We're going to start with Staff Member of the Year, and your choices are, there's a multitude of guys, but one of the honorable mention is someone that's been with the club for a really, really long time, and he's worth honoring.
Yeah, so I went with Derek Johnson. I thought that I wasn't at training as much this year, but what I saw when Derek was in charge of the group in Sioux Falls was him take a step forward from just the guy who was around, who was just kind of helping out when in the early days, to the guy who had to coach the goalkeepers because we didn't have a goalkeeper coach until we were able to fully sign Allie, and then Allie unfortunately left, and then we had to wait who did we get? I forget. Joe Warren. Before we got Joe Warren, he had to kind of step in, and then ultimately John Pucci moved into that role this year. But
the Pooch.
But Derek took that step in that game to be like the type of coach who he had a plan. He had an option if it didn't work. He had an option if it worked to shore things up on the road. He understood the gravity of the situation with how hard it is to actually win in Sioux Falls. He kind of put it all together. I thought his game plan was sound. His delivery to the team of like at halftime, like, we're down 2-0. Get your shit together or I'm going to the guys on the bench and we're changing this up. And then he stuck with it. He said, like, go perform. Or you're coming out, and the guys who didn't perform came out at halftime. I came out shortly after halftime, like almost 10 minutes on the clock, 60th around the 55th minute. His subs came in, and those subs changed the game, ultimately ending with the week scoring those two goals. So I definitely went with Derek for that one.
Nice.
For honorable mention.
And now, Staff Member of the Year is actually members.
Yes.
Talk about them.
Members. I went with John and Kevin, our sports ops guys. So you're like, so John, who are these guys? They're the guys behind the scenes who make everything work. Like, do the laundry, do the team sheets, do the substitutions and all the stats for us on the side. But the reason why I selected them was because in the split year, focus had to go elsewhere. Like, yes, Jeremiah and his staff with the futures. They were the franchise model. They just took their equipment and they just did their thing and they made it work and they called on the club whenever they absolutely needed something. But with the split group at the senior level, you really needed people behind the scenes to make sure stuff didn't happen. You know, like our last game, like knowing, like finding out that we couldn't wear the City of Lakes shorts because of they clashed with Joy Athletics shorts.
Right.
And it was like, and then it's like sports ops guys, boom, I got a set in my car. We'll wear black shorts today. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was like they had that shit taken care of.
Bam.
And in a DIY lower level soccer setting, you just need people to do what they say they're going to do and to like perform when they have to and show up. And these guys were there at training, at the matches, putting in the work. And I don't think that the sports ops people get enough credit because they do the dirty work. So Kevin and John, you're my guys this year.
Nice. Nice. Up next, Young Player of the Year. And you know, we're going to talk about Young Player. We're going to talk about Breakout Player, Most Improved as well. But it's not – Young Player of the Year is just generally someone who is new to the program, quite young, and is blown up. But we already talked about the honorable mention here, John, and it's someone that started his career with City so promising against Duluth FC.
And that's Kalen Mata-Castillo. And to Kalen's credit, so Kalen was kind of just like the, I'm going to say afterthought to start the season, not because of how he could perform, but just because we already had, we had goalkeepers that we had already penciled in at the futures level, at the senior level. But then it was like, we still need that third guy who's just going to always show up, who's going to perform when he goes in, who's going to not care what team he's playing on, what day, and just going to go in and do the job. And with having that split season, Kalen was the only player to play across all three teams. You know, he went on the road, to Canada when some guys couldn't go. He played in a futures game, on a Saturday afternoon where we had two games going on that day. He played with the MPSL group whenever Troy wasn't able to make it, and he never complained. Then he just went out and performed. And that's the kind of guy you want. The one who's always going to be around, great attitude, especially for a third goalkeeper. So definitely giving it to Kalen.
Word. All right. And the award for Young Player of the Year, John, goes to
Andrew Szczesinski. So Andrew was an interesting player. He came to us via the, hey, I'd like to play for your club. Here's my highlight tape and here's my info. And we were looking for more defensive help. Andrew actually is a product of Shattuck St. Mary's. So we actually had seen him before and knew of him from when we were still in the relationship of playing them in the preseason. He ultimately left and didn't play with us last summer, but went off and played his freshman year at Boston University. So playing for a decent Division I program, came to us, and within like the first 5 minutes of me coming to training, and typically just sort of the folks who don't know, when a new player comes in on a trial type process, Matt and the coaching staff would have me come and focus on watching that player so that they could actually run the session. And then so they would obviously be able to see this player in action in the drills and in the 11-a-side and whatnot. But for me to focus on a player, to say like, here's the little things I saw that you maybe didn't see, to help them make the selection decision. Within 5 minutes of seeing Andrew play, I was like, I remember him. He's a very solid soccer player. And let's bring him on. And we did bring him on, and he didn't get a lot of opportunity. But when he did, he became a lot like Kalen, where he was the third, fourth choice from a defensive perspective. And then he got in out of necessity, and then he never came out of the lineup. Produced a really, I think, player of the match performance against Joy in that last game of the season.
Word. On to most improved, John. I'm not going to comment about how much you love a deep sitting midfielder, because that's obvious. On to most improved. And this doesn't have to mean that it's somebody that is
was shit before.
Yeah, garbage by any means, but it's definitely someone that might have had a down year for a number of reasons, and they showed up big, right, in the season. And we'll start with honorable mention, because I love to see this guy's name pop up.
Yeah, I went with Samuel Ruiz Plaza. Samo was a fulcrum of the original team as a 19-year-old.
Nice. Yeah.
And he's been with us ever since. He's never been able to go through a full season, always picked up an injury. This was the first year where he actually was with us from start to finish. And on top of all the other things he was doing in his life. And the reason why I say he's most improved is because he stayed healthy, which will be a common theme as we talk about the next person as well. He just performed, and I know he probably didn't feel like he did as well as we're talking about him doing and giving him this honor, but he really did. I mean, he brought energy. He brought everything that we want to see out of vintage Sam Ruiz Plaza this year in a down year. And he didn't complain about it. He just went out and played soccer. And he's always got a great attitude, good locker room guy. Yeah, so he was that. He definitely improved on being healthy. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And then we got to, and then we got to see full Sammo this year.
That's a great point. It is, like you said, nice to see the full Sammo and all the Cavs. But the other most improved player, another player that's been with us for a long time, is Charlie Adams. Talk about him.
Yeah, so my most improved goes to Chuck. Unfortunately, I'll say before he got injured, he picked up a very bad muscle injury to his hamstring, which was in a game where he was outperforming everyone on the field and he was everywhere. Took a lot of lumps this year, both on the field in matches, but also just like through roster selection, being that he was kind of our club's outside right back until we had to split the club up. And it was like, okay, like Charlie's got to play somewhere, you know, because you can't keep him off the field. So he moved into a central role, which he played in college. And he performed. And I thought when you took him out of the equation, that's where we had the revolving door of who's going to sit in front of the back line. And I don't think we ever figured it out until we'll talk about we talked about our breakout player of the year. When we found out Andrew can play the six, and he played it so well that he was the man of the match. He rallied the crossbar twice from distance. Unlucky to get a goal there, but before that, Charlie was probably the most consistent best player on the team, I think.
Agreed. On to breakout player of the year, because you did get a little confused. Oh, we did young player of the year, but we have not done breakout player of the year.
Cat's out of the bag. It's Andrew.
Cat's out of the bag. Turns out it's the same player, John. Why?
Like I said, he just got his opportunity, and being that we need to identify the next generation of player that's coming through. I know we have the futures program, but you also need to find players that don't come through the futures. He was it. And like I said, he had some growing pains. We found out that the USL level was a little too much for him, but not far away from what he can do and how he can be put in a position to play at his best. But then when we inserted him into the MPSL group on a regular basis, kind of became that guy, like, we don't have to worry about Andrew. He's gonna perform. Not gonna dazzle, but he's gonna do his job. Mm-hmm. And then he moved into the defensive center midfield role for one game. We're like, well, there we go. He should play there now. And really like helped us bring home a much needed victory in our last game of the season.
Nice. Now onto the newcomer of the year. So again, we're not talking about someone that's necessarily young or has really put his stamp. It's just it came out of nowhere, right? But it's someone that is new to the club who we think really contributed on some level or another. And the honorable mention for this one, John, is somebody that you wouldn't think of as an NPSL player, and yet here he is.
It's Jameson Charles. So Jameson has kind of been in and out of our setup and never like featured for us in a match up until this year. Was the Metro Player of the Year, went off and played and still plays college soccer at University of North Carolina. Big program, super nice guy, just like loves to play soccer. He's the Minnesota N'Golo Kanté. He is a forever wound up rubber band on the field and just covers all the ground and does all the dirty work, breaks up the tackles, looks to keep possession, move the ball quick. And he did that so much so that it was like, we need to get him into the USL 2 setup, because where are we finding problem energy in the midfield with the setup that we were going with? And when he was taken out of the NPSL group specifically, so he was the first guy to basically come into that role after Charlie went down, then it was like, well, now we have to move Jameson to this other group. And then now what do we do next? So, but before he was elevated full time to the USL setup, he was just like the best player on the field.
Everywhere. Sometimes he was the best player on the field through the USL 2 squad.
Yeah, exactly. And then the newcomer of the year, another guy who had kind of been in and out of the setup as well, is Aiden Kavanaugh. So coming from Joy of the People. Was actually slotted to be on our UPSL team the previous season. Then COVID happened, and then it was like now what? And then he was able to finally come in with us. And I think it was a calculated move because of transferring colleges from Missouri, Kansas City to University of Connecticut, which is another big program. And he wanted to be around players of kind of that level, that mindset. Not to say that the players at Joy the People are not at that level or mindset, but you kind of, you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
To be around guys that are coming from Dayton and coming from North Carolina and Virginia Tech and New Hampshire, you know, like to be around the guys that and the quality that you're looking to potentially supplant in at your college setup was the right move for him. And I thought from an offensive perspective, creatively, it's his MO. He's so good on the ball, but I think what he didn't quite know how to translate it for a little bit. And then once he figured that out, it was guns blazing. He was scoring goals at the MPSL level. Mm-hmm. He was featuring at the USL2 level with more production value than he was in the beginning of the season. And I thought he ended the year against his old homeboys at Joy. The combination of he and Andrew and Samuel in the middle in that game.
So good.
Won the game for us.
Yep. Yeah, I was – and I remember even at that game, I'm like, I cannot believe these guys are getting subbed out.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like I think both Samo and Aiden got pulled by the end of the game, and it's just like this is the engine of the team. What is happening? So again,
been doing it for like 50 minutes.
Right.
60 minutes.
Right. So back to teachable moments. There yep. were so many. It's roster decisions and in-game decisions might have been one of them. John, I want to move on to defensive MVP because in a season where the team struggled, I think it's important to recognize that we were hanging in there, right? Except for a couple games where we got blown out of the water. That Med City game was a nightmare for one. You know, this was not a game of total breakdowns. And I think defensively there are some guys that we want to make sure we're honoring. And again, the honorable mention is somebody that would not be thought of as an NPSL player first and foremost, but was for a time.
And that's Xavier Zenge. Xavier comes from the University of Dayton, his first year with us. I think could have been a breakout player, and maybe still could. We haven't done the USL2 awards yet, but Xavier's ability to lock down and do his defensive job and always be turned on, but and clued in and aware of what's happening, but then to see what he can do with the ball at its foot to attack out of the back is something we haven't seen in a long time. And he did that when we're talking about that Sioux Falls game. And when I was on the bench, I just walked over to Derek and I was like, we need to move Xavier into a forward position, not like at forward, but move him maybe to like a winger in a 4-3-3. Before he burns himself out, because he's going 100 miles an hour and he's so dangerous. Like, let's take the defensive responsibility off of his plate and let him go forward because he's so dynamic when he gets onto the offensive half of the field. So he's my honorable mention.
I think he debuted, or at least I remember him featuring in that game against Duluth. And you're right, it was just like this guy for a right back is in the box a lot.
Yeah. A lot, and getting back and defending.
Yep, which was crazy. On to defensive MVP, John. This guy, goddamn, I'm happy to recognize him. He had such a great season and was really the heartbeat of this team. Who was it?
Matt Murakami, like hands down, like the defensive side of the ball for the MPSL squad was a revolving door. There wasn't a lot of mainstay there. A lot of guys were coming in and out based off of need, but the one guy who was always there was Matt Murakami. And he, like we said, he captained the squad for a little bit this year, but also he added in the offensive side of things. But we'll talk, we don't have to belabor his offensive stuff right now because this is a defensive award, but Matt is just that I basically equate him to like the guy at the YMCA playing basketball at lunch hour. You're like, oh yeah, I can dominate that guy. And then the guy's like alley-oop dunking over you. And you're like, where the fuck did this guy come from? That's Matt Murakami. Like, no disrespect to you, Matt, if you're listening, but like people look at Matt and they're like, he's just a basic soccer player. And then he goes and performs, he locks you down. he'll kick the shit out of you if you get by him. He won't like put up with anything from pesky forwards. And from a leadership perspective, did the talking on the field this year, which I think is what got him the armband.
Yeah. So congratulations to Matt, well-earned defensive player of the year. Always kind of been a role player on this squad, but this is the year he stepped up and cemented his spot, not only as the starter, but as a captain. So that's amazing. On to offensive MVP. And I don't know what you can say, John, here is that, this is a guy who I think we already honored him as offensive MVP for the UPSL, but like when he scores 7 goals, that's kind of going to lock it in.
Yeah. And that'd be Loic Mbassambi.
Surprise.
I don't think we have to even talk about it. Like, thank God we had Loic this year.
Yep. I heard that.
But yeah, like we were saying, like he, when he gets the ball, I think we did talk about this last time. It's been a bit, but he's that player when you watch any level of soccer, when they get the ball, you kind of go to the edge of your seat a little bit. Mm-hmm. Or you lean forward because you're like, something special could happen here. Whether he's doing it himself or he's getting on the other end of something that someone else did, he just performs in the offensive third. That's why he's playing professional soccer right now, out of high school. Like, he hasn't even graduated high school yet.
That's crazy.
And he's playing in a full pro setup, albeit for a second team, but still it's professional soccer, playing every day. Malik, he gets it.
Congrats. On to our final award, player of the year. And we've already mentioned his name, John. Who's it going to be?
It's Matt Murakami. So Matt, all the stuff I said about you being the guy at the YMCA basketball at lunchtime, I take it all back because you, sir, were the MPSL player of the year this year. You captained the squad. You contributed 4 goals this year, which was the highest output I think we've ever had from a defender. I think you've also elevated your career headed goals to be top of the heap at 3.
Yeah.
So again, from a guy who doesn't look like he can jump out of the gym, was jumping out of the gym using the head to score goals, was voted league best 11. And like we mentioned it before, that leadership down the stretch was really, I think, what just helped that squad like hold together whatever we had left in the second half of the season to get us out of not having, we didn't have more wins than losses.
Absolutely. A phenomenal performance on the season from Matt. And I'm just really excited to see more of him next year. Hopefully we'll see. And his family always comes. They come to every game.
Yeah. Like my kids love his dog.
Yeah.
Love his dog. And apparently like, did I ever tell you that when we played against, out in Minnetonka versus Twin Stars, I couldn't find my kids. And I was like, where the hell did my kids go? And I was like solo dadding it, just like trying to go watch the sneak quick game in. And then Jonah's like, oh, they're down there sitting with Murakami's fiance. And they're like they're like bookending his fiance underneath a blanket, like petting the dog. And I was like, dude, my kids are trying to pick up his fiance. Grandma didn't like it. Grandma loves the dog. And she wasn't happy that 2 little kids were getting all the airtime.
That's funny. Well, John, let's recap the NPSL season with some team stats. The record this year, you could call it disappointing. 7 wins, 1 draw, 6 losses, right? I think last few seasons we've turned a lot of those close games into victories or at least draws, but instead we drop all those points, which meant only 22 points on the season, 29 goals for, which is respectable. But here's the issue, 27 goals against on the year compared to eight on the UPSL side, which is not enough to earn us much better than 4th in the NPSL North. So one of the more disappointing seasons in recent memory from this squad, but looking to bounce back next year, get our collective stuff together, and maybe our NPSL awards will be better off next year.
Yeah, who knows? I think my closing thoughts on the season, I know it was tough. And we've talked about how tough it was. I'm just finally at the point where we can stop talking about how tough it was and we can move forward. I think that credit to Marco, credit to the staff, credit to all the players that played. You know, I know it was tough. I know there was a lot of negativity around all of it, but the positives of coming out of it with a winning season was about the best case scenario, and we achieved that throughout all the muck.
Yeah, not mucky.
Not mucky. Well, that is all for this week's show. Thank you for listening, folks. And thank you to our wonderful show sponsor, footballstadiumprints.com. If you are in the market for supremely curated, soccer-focused graphic design on anything from mugs, t-shirts, or prints, head on over to footballstadiumprints.com and fill up your cart. And don't forget, use the code CROWS10 for 10% off everything you purchase. And remember, all U.S. orders ship right from the United States, so no pesky international shipping charges. 2023 memberships are now available. Jump in early and you get a voice that helps to shape the club for next year. And there's a discount right now, so get on it before the price goes up. And as a reminder, Minneapolis City is a 501c3, so consider that tax deductible charitable gift to a club that loves to give back. If you're interested in getting a hold of us, we made it super simple. You can hit the club on Twitter at MPLSCityFC, us at the show at the People's Pitch, or via email mcscpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that is all for this week's show, folks. I'm John. That was Nate. The offseason, again, is in full effect. We are gearing up to bring our final installment of the official, unofficial People's Pitch podcast season awards with the USL2 at our next show. We're working on getting some special guests, and we'll continue to keep you up to speed on all things club related as it trickles down. But don't leave it up to us. What do you want us to cover? This is the People's Club, the People's Show, so you have a voice in what we bring to you. And as always, you got hooked. Snoring dog again.
It's so loud.